No, thank you. Sleepy. Just come back in an hour.
Need sleepy.
Please go away. Let me sleep for the love of God!
It's now time for the Billy C. Morning Show, part of the Billy C. Boxing Network. Interact with the show at BillyCBoxing.com.
And we're coming to you live from the Billy C. Studios in Lake George, New York. I'm Bill Caligiuri, and it's time for the Billy C. Morning Show. Good morning to everybody. Hope you're doing all right this fine morning. We're glad to be with you. And, of course, we're glad you're with us. Today's show is being broadcast on Fight TV. And we might have a special guest coming up later in the week. Fight TV is celebrating their one-year anniversary being on air. So we'll keep you posted on that. If you aren't watching us on Fight TV, hey, you can get Fight TV on your handheld. Just go to Fight, that's F-I-T-E, fight.tv/Billy C. Download the app for free right now and enjoy the show whenever you want. And by the way, they have all the shows on demand as well. Today's show is being brought to us in part by Sal's Neighborhood Pizzeria, an Italian restaurant located in St. Simons Island, Georgia. Check out the website, www.salsneighborhoodpizzeria.com, or give my man a call, 912-268-2328, 912-268-2328. Don't forget, if you're heading south for the winter and you're traveling on I-95, you could stop off at Sal's, enjoy a meal. It's literally a 15-minute out-of-your-way detour off of I-95, and that includes stopping for some red lights. So if you run the red lights, you'll get there even sooner. Check out the website for the address, www.salsneighborhoodpizzeria.com. Today's show is also being brought to us in part by FireFan, a great new fantasy sports game for all sports. What am I talking about? Well, go check it out. Visit our website, www.billycboxing.com, and click on the FireFan banner, which is on the left-hand side of the website. And speaking of the website, BillyCBoxing.com has been revamped a little bit, and it's going to continue to be revamped. It's your best spot for all the news that's fit to print. It's right there on the front page now. You don't have to go searching. It's right there. So scroll down and check out all the news that we feel is fit to print. So it's right on the front page, BillyCBoxing.com. And finally, today's show is being brought to us in part by my book, Tom Molino, From Bondage The Baddest Man on the Planet, is available right now where all good books are sold. And you can literally get a copy of it right now while you're watching the show. Just go to BarnesandNoble.com or Amazon.com. Find out why we got a 5-star rating across the board. Looking to get a signed copy? Don't worry about it. Visit our website, BillyCBoxing.com, and click on the book club section. And if you want something specific written, make sure you put that in the comments section. Speaking of comments, we've got some fight results to talk about. But first and foremost, the New England Patriots come from behind and beat the Falcons 34-28 in the first ever overtime Super Bowl. Tom Brady was named MVP of the Super Bowl 51, and rightly so. The Patriots are actually right now the favorite to win next year's Super Bowl, Super Bowl 52. The Falcons jumped out to a 21-3 halftime lead. But the entire second half, the Falcons only mustered up a third quarter touchdown and allowed the Patriots to score 25 points to tie the game and then score the winning touchdown in overtime to seal it. Tom Brady threw for 466 yards, a couple of touchdowns, and a pick. But talk about a classic game. I mean, a tale of two teams. One team looking like they were unstoppable in the Falcons, and the old grizzled veterans of the New England Patriots just didn't panic and rolled the arm and the hands of some great receivers, rolled the arm of Tom Brady to win the game. Joining me right now with his thoughts on the game is my man Sal Rocky Senicola. What's up, Sal?
Billy, what could I say, buddy? What a great game and a great morning for you and the fans out here today. Let's have a great one ahead. Let me tell you, it went down unbelievably so well for the Patriots and so unfortunate for the Atlanta fans. I know that You know, like I said Friday, I told you. When in Rome, do as Rome. So I was rooting for Atlanta. I thought in my heart wanted Atlanta, but New England, I told you in my head, if I was going to bet the game, New England's got the experience. They know how to win. They've been there, done that. And what you saw happen in that last half of the game was totally what I was talking about. These guys just put it together. They dismantled Atlanta one piece by one piece, and their defense fell apart, and Brady did a genius job, and so did the other teammates. So it was a great game, one of the best ever.
You know, the Falcons' offense was definitely causing the Patriots' D a lot of fits in the beginning.
Bill Belichick,
the genius that he is, made a couple of adjustments in the locker room during the halftime show, which incidentally was a pretty good show from Lady Gaga. I got to admit, yeah. I enjoyed it. You know, they come out, and this is where I think the experience came into play, both as an organization for the New England Patriots and their top guys being Bill Belichick and, of course, Tom Brady.
Yes.
And, you know, they started getting to, Matt Ryan and the Falcons offense. And you got to give a lot of credit to the Patriots defense, Sal, because they pretty much shut down the Falcons and then gave Tom Brady the opportunity to come back and you know, make this a game and ultimately win. I mean, the last thing you want to do is put the game in Tom Brady's hands. The best thing they were doing in the first half was keeping the ball out of his hands. You know,
exactly.
Making him do some mistakes and making a couple of silly decisions. But it seems like they abandoned that. I think it's just, you know, the Patriots have that attitude. We've been there, done that. We're going to win no matter what the odds are. And I think they proved it last night.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, Billy, it was such an exciting game, and even the post-game shows with father and son there on the sidelines and talking and talking about Howie Long, and it was a storybook, it really was. And I saw that fourth quarter, they panned the cameras, and you saw the sign, the eyes of defeat. As Atlanta was on the sidelines, everybody that they showed was just looking like, wow, how the heck did we blow this one now? And it was just unbelievable. It really was. One of the best Super Bowl games I can remember. Of course, you're not going to like when I say the other one. The couple of the ones that I like was also the ones when my New York Giants beat the New England Patriots.
Yeah, well, you know, that
was a great game.
That luck. Rode with the Giants when they won, and there was certainly luck with the Patriots. No disrespect to Tom Brady, but that one catch, it was an unbelievable catch. I don't have who made the catch. I think it was. I would rather not say the name than say the wrong name, but I think it changed the complexion of the game. The way it looked like it was going to be an interception, then it looked like it was going to be a breakup play. And then before you know it, he makes the reception off of the defender's foot. There was three Falcons all over him.
Yeah.
And he comes up with the catch that I think changed the flow of the game.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. You know, like I said, the shift of momentum, you keep poking at a balloon, you're going to deflate it. And that's what they kept doing. They kept poking at Atlanta. And they poked and poked, and boom, all of a sudden, all the air fell out. And they just became average Atlanta, and
well,
it was a shame because, you know, Atlanta deserved to be there. They were running away with the game. You know, we were at the pizzeria. We had, of course, all my employees, and I was rooting for Atlanta. Everybody was rooting for Atlanta, and my buddy Massimo and a couple other people were there, and the cooks came out, and Doug's one of my cooks is from Maine, so he's rooting for New England, and my son Nicholas was there. We had dinner and we were watching a game. It was great, great, great night. Great night at Sal's, and a lot of fun. But, you know, just to see how New England just dismantled them piece by piece, took the heart and soul away from Atlanta and just totally dominated that second, not even, I don't want to say the whole second half, but I think there were 30 unanswered points that that New England Patriots put up there.
Yeah, well, hey, you know, it's over now.
That's what winners do. Winners know how to win. That's it.
Well, I think the key.
That was a fight. That was a heavyweight championship of the world going 15 rounds. How's that? That was an Ali Frazier.
Well, the key here was that the Patriots did not panic despite being down 21-3 at the half. But anyway, Luis Ortiz this weekend has been blasting Deontay Wilder. And everything he's saying is true, Sal. I mean, let me just get some fight results that matter out of the way. Speaking of heavyweight division, undefeated German heavyweight, Ajit Kabale, improved to 16-0 with 12 knockouts when he scored a 12-round unanimous decision over Hervé Huguenot, who drops to 26-2 in the process. Kabale picked up the vacant Euro heavyweight title. The way judges saw it, 117-111, 117-112, 119-109 was the way all three judges scored that one. In some other heavyweight action on the other side of the pond, Christian Hammer improved to 24 wins and 4 losses when he scored a 7th round stoppage over David Price, who, for all intent purposes, David Price, he's been exposed, and now he's just a proverbial punching bag. A gatekeeper trying to make a few bucks before he's not worth the price of admission. He drops to 21-4, despite him winning an Olympic medal. He certainly seems to have run out of gas in the pro ranks. So Christian Hammer back on the right track. And also one other fight I wanted to mention, Chris Eubank Jr. Stopped Reynald Quinlan in the 10th round, 2 minutes and 7 seconds of the 10th round, to improve to 24-1. Quinlan drops to 11-2. So we'll keep everyone posted on those three fights. But getting back to what I started to say, Luis Ortiz, who many people feel may be one of the best, if not the best, heavyweight out there, basically went on a rant this past weekend and was saying some stuff, Sal, that I agree with 100%. He basically says, when I look at, and this is from Luis Ortiz, he says, when I look at Deontay Wilder, I see an unsure, scared fighter. He's crazy with his technique. He's worried about being hit. When you're that worried about getting hit, when you finally do get hit, you usually get knocked out. Apparently, Luis Ortiz got pissed off because Deontay Wilder said in public that he would want to fight. He would have wanted to fight Luis Ortiz, but since he tested positive, he doesn't want to fight anybody that's on performance-enhancing drugs. And Luis Ortiz said, "Hey, listen, I signed up for the WBC VADA clean boxing program last year. Stop using that excuse to fight me." He said, "The bottom line, this is all Luis Ortiz says. He's scared. The more he can use my failed drug test against me, he will. He and DiBella are saying they won't fight me because of that. That was years ago. Incidentally, it was 2014. He says, and since that unfortunate incident for which I was punished, I have been tested a dozen times since then and have come up clean. Now he's trying to say I haven't signed up for the VADA Clean Boxing Act. Guess what, Deontay? I signed up last September when I was notified that all WBC contenders needed to be part of their new clean boxing program. I filled out the paperwork and my trainer submitted it to the WBC so he can stop using that excuse to avoid me. I got nothing to hide and I don't have to prove any longer to anyone that I'm clean. Wilder's nothing but a paper champion who happened to have been in the right place at the right time against the right opponent with, mostly importantly, the right promoter. That's all he says. That's all he is. Ortiz says sooner or later, Wilder will run out of excuses to avoid him, or he'll be run out of boxing. He says, my mentality was always to beat whoever was the best fighter in my division, period. I don't handpick my opponents. This is all weird and new to me. He can't run for much longer, though. I assume he will try to unify or vacate before he has to fight me. He can't unify with the Joshua Klitschko winner because I'm the mandatory above any unification fight, and I will not be jumped over. So he can try to beat up Joseph Parker after his next fight, then retire. the paper champion he is. I got to say this, Sal. I agree with everything Luis Ortiz says. I mean, Deontay Wilder, I've been saying for a long time, Deontay Wilder, really, aside from himself pounding on his chest, how can anyone say that he's a real champion? He has no one on his resume to boast about. And I believe Luis Ortiz is the guy that a Deontay Wilder has to fight to prove to people like myself that he really deserves to be a champion. I agree with everything Luis Ortiz is saying here. What's your thoughts?
Well, yeah, he spelled it right out, and he called him out, and I think he has a right to do so, and I think it's right on, too. And I believe you. I believe him. Yep. I think these guys should get in a ring. And, you know, anybody that Deontay Wilder faces, it's like on a larger scale with the heavyweights versus the welterweights. He's been pulling the Floyd Mayweather route to success, and that game book, you know, he can only stave off so many opponents that are all coming to get you. I mean, you know, that's the whole thing. There's so many top guys out there in the heavyweight division that I don't think Deontay Wilder could beat.
Well, I mean, the issue here is that he needs to fight them.
He needs to fight them. Well, that's the whole thing. How could you be a paper champion and not fight the best out there?
Well, I mean, the thing with Wilder is he's constantly fighting these guys that are just not relevant to a title in any way, shape, or form. You know, in today's sport of boxing, where there's so many title holders, at least go after somebody that's relevant. You know, this is a guy that picks obscure opponents. His next fight, he had the injury that he had to pick another guy. But, I mean, they're making it like it's a last-minute sub. He still has 4 weeks to train, Washington does, you know. So, I don't know. You know, I think Deontay Wilder is clearly a fraud. And until he beats a guy like Luis Ortiz or any of the top guys. And I also agree with Ortiz. No disrespect to Joseph Parker. I know he holds one of the belts, but this was another guy that was hand-fed cupcakes and ate them and ended up, shitting out a world title, you know. I got some news to talk about with that. With his first mandatory fight is against Huey Fury, who's never fought anybody of note. So, I mean, you know, the whole this whole championship, people that are saying who their champions, for the most part, a lot of them don't even have to fight anyone near good in order to be a champion.
Right. I know. Well, you know what you said? I'll never forget. You know, my comeback fight 3.5, almost 4 years now, when I went back, you and John, we were talking, because I said, you know, guys, I want to keep going. I want to go on. Now, I had a torn rotator cuff, so it didn't look like I was going to have that opportunity after that happened. And that would have taken another year to heal up. But you also made it sound like the division said, Sal, the way it is, 25 years later in a fight game, anybody can get a belt. And it's not going to mean the same as you thought it would have meant to you 25 years earlier. And you could probably get 5 fights and you'll get a title shot. And I was like looking at you like, come on, really? And but you know what? After what I've seen over the last 3 years, it's as I would say, spot on.
Well, I mean, that's how, no disrespect to you, but that's how sad the sport is. You know, a guy that was retired for 25 years come back and, pushing 70 years old. And
Whoa.
I'm sorry. Maybe I went a little too far. But, a guy of your age, after a couple of fights and maneuvered correctly, and next thing you know, you'd be the number one contender, and somebody would have to fight you then. You know, once you get in the ring, all bets are off. Anything can happen.
Throw up.
You know?
But lead me to the water. I'll do the drinking.
Yeah, no, I hear you. A couple other things I wanted to mention real quick, and then I got some emails to read. They made it official on May 6th, Saul Canelo Alvarez against Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. Will be taking place in Las Vegas. you know, as you know, this is going to be a pay-per-view fight. It's taking place on Saturday, May 6th, the Cinco de Mayo weekend, which normally Floyd Mayweather fights on, at least made that his weekend. So Canelo Alvarez has stepped up and taken that date to fight in Vegas. So we'll see what happens with Floyd. But Canelo said, I love fighting in Vegas. It's where the most important fights have historically been, and I'm happy to be back at the T-Mobile Arena for this huge event on Cinco de Mayo weekend. I know that people from all over the world, America, obviously Mexico and everywhere else will attend to witness a great show. Julio says, I'm happy to return to Vegas where I found many important battles, where I fought many important battles in the ring. Vegas is the home of boxing, so we'll see what happens there. And speaking of Joseph Parker and Huey Fury, the promoter for Joseph Parker, Duco Promotions, won the purse bid. Duco Events picked it up for, I think, $3 million, or at least $3 million of the New Zealand dollars. It's looking like $3 million bucks, but it's going to be taking place April 1st. And we'll see what happens with that. Remember, Parker's undefeated, 22-08, 18 knockouts. And Huey Fury, he's at 20 wins with 10 knockouts. I personally don't think either one of them should even be close to a title holder, but it is what it is. Got a couple of emails, Sal. You ready?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
This first one's from my man Luke. He says, hey, this is Luke from The Englishman in Korea. Last week I told you that I think the Billy C. Show spends too much time discussing politics these days. I respect the fact that you still chose to read my negative criticism on the air. This really says something positive about the integrity of yourself and your show. Like I've said, hey, if you guys take the time to write an email, I'll take the time to read it, whether I agree with it or not. And I don't expect everyone to agree with us.
No.
I mean, when you don't, that's it. You know, you're dead to us. But anyway, no, I'm only kidding. No. He says, so although I feel like I've taken a Sonny Liston jab, I've taken the standing A count, and I'm contacting you now to apologize. There's no need to apologize, dude. I mean, I don't look at it as like that. It was your opinion, and everybody's entitled to an opinion. He says, in particular, I'm sorry for my choice of words. When I said the political chat was sending the show downhill, that was bad from me to say. You had asked your listeners for suggestions on your show, and I now realize that my email didn't offer anything constructive towards that decision. He says, for me, the thing which puts the Billy C. Show so far above the others is that you and Sal are happy and willing to refer back to the great fighters of the past. Too many boxing shows and podcasts seem to dismiss anything before Floyd, and consequently, too many brainwashed fans place too much emphasis on the unbeaten O. Can't disagree with that one, right, Sal?
No, I'll tell you, I like this email from Luke. Thank you.
He says, my suggestion for 2017 would be for your show to dedicate a special focus upon any televised fight, particularly undercard bouts, where we see two young unbeaten fighters going at it. Hopefully more fans will learn that the true warriors take chances. If I look at the top five fighters of all time, in his opinion, Robinson, Armstrong, Langford, Ali, and Greb, only two of them even won their first five fights. But it takes a man to admit he made mistakes, so I hope you accept our apology. You don't have to apologize, so I mean, you got to stop.
But I know where he's coming from, and there was nothing that we needed to accept, but I do thank him very much for that very nice email, and says, I understand where he's coming from.
Well, he's not done yet. He says,
I know. Go ahead. Continue.
And I hope Sal doesn't knock me out when I finally meet him at his restaurant in the United States. I've hardly missed a show in the last 4 years, and I send my best wishes for continuing success for the show. He says, P.S., one man's opinion is as valid as another's, and I still prefer boxing chat to the political stuff. Hey, listen, Luke, I appreciate the email and your candor. And
thank you, Luke.
You know, the truth of the matter is it is all about opinions. And you're right. We don't need to talk about politics a lot, and we don't. You know, when we were talking a little about politics, it was during the presidential race here, and there was a lot of discussion across the board with everyone here in the States about, you know, the political scene. So, I mean, yeah, it's hard to discuss, and people shouldn't discuss, at least in public forums, politics or religion. So you can relax and take it to the bank that we're not going to be focusing too much on politics. If something crazy happens, we might touch on it just to give our opinion. But for the most part, this is a sports talk show, and it surrounds boxing first. So I appreciate the email. And all I can say, Sal, is don't worry about it, right? I mean, we're not going to I appreciate him taking the time to
I do, emails. Too. It was very nice and very well written. And I thank Luke for sending that and definitely letting us know that we are doing a good job and the points that are of his interest and what we do overall. So thank you, Luke. Appreciate the email.
One last email, long one. This one's from my man, Willie.
And Willie!
This is, Billy C., this email is in regard to the main events on ITV box office show, which was broadcast Saturday night. And he says, yes, I actually watched it. When I was in the chat room the other day, I asked the guys who they thought would win the Price versus Hammer fight, which was on the Eubank Quinlan undercard. And Coach replied, Willie, you'd be better off watching some cartoon shows. And both Coach and Dak said Hammer would most likely win. Well, they were both correct. I did watch the fight, if you call it that. And I got to say, what a effing embarrassment it was. Both Price and Hammer were totally gassed out by the second round. Price looked like a lumbering zombie. And I don't mean any disrespect to the zombies out there. He says he came into the fight weighing 275 pounds and he looked like he just come from a binge. He just looked like he just came from a binge at a burger bar, followed by a couple of beers in his changing room. Judging by his performance in the ring, I got the impression that he just didn't train at all. And I'm not exaggerating. He really looked that bad. Hammer didn't look so good either, coming in at 265 with his little man boobs and his Michelin man gut. Michelin man as in the tire man, gut. He says, they have mirrors in their gyms? In the first round, Price managed to keep Hammer at the end of his jab. By round two, the Merryside man found himself on his back foot, and he let Hammer constantly walk him backwards into the ropes. Why the F is such a big man allowing a smaller guy to walk him backwards? And then he just stayed there and cover up while Hammer kept punching around and threw his guard. Throughout the fight, Price demonstrated that he had no idea how to control the distance. He came under heavy attack in the fourth as Hammer kept landing rights. And the fifth round was more of the same, but Price retaliated with a sneaky right uppercut and sent Hammer to the canvas, but didn't have enough time or energy to capitalize on it and finish him off. Hammer had Price in trouble by the end of the sixth and with an uppercut, and both men traded after the bell. In the seventh, Price found himself up against the ropes again with Hammer landing a number of hooks upstairs. Price was so gassed out by now that he couldn't even cover up, and he stayed bent forward with no guard, allowing Hammer to have free shots at his head. Thankfully, at this point, the referee stepped in and declared Price unfit to continue. I think the reason that Hammer won this fight is because he was the least gassed out of the two. It was a pathetic affair. Price couldn't even stand up for the announcement at the end. I can't see Price coming back from this, and I feel he should now realize that he just doesn't have what it takes to fight at the high level. He just hasn't got the fitness, and at best he would be fodder for young up-and-coming heavyweights. I think his plan was to win this fight, which he may well have done if he trained for it, and then go on to have one last fight against one of the big guys in the talented division just for a retirement purse, knowing he would have zero chance beating guys like Joshua Klitschko, Wilder, Ortiz, and those other guys, and any of those other guys. Maybe the best thing for him now to do is stick to driving around in his plumber's van and forget about trying to get rich in a boxing game. I think it's the end for him. He's got a couple other comments here, which I'll read, but this is the type of fed-up attitude that we need in the sport of boxing, Sal, because if more fans like Willie get so fed up and turn it off and stop watching it, I think that would force the promoters and the networks to start to get better quality matchups. I mean, we do see really good matchups in drips and drabs, but then there's more of a plethora of unworthy matchups that we got to sit through in order to get the good ones. What do you think?
Well, I think so. You know, we have, I'll tell you what, this year, let's see how we pan out with this month of February. We've had a couple good fights that we were offered and we watched and we enjoyed seeing in January. And like we often say, Bill, every fight can't be a world beater, can't be the one of dream match that we want to see. But to give us a saturation or to give us a good dose, a constant dose of well-matched fighters entering the gym, entering the ring, that's what the fans are looking for and waiting for. And, you know, the other side of the coin is, are the fans, the secondary or tertiary fans that do watch the sport and follow the sport, are they all that much into being proactive enough to shut it down or to walk away or so? You know, some of them have been brainwashed and can sit through a fight that's a mismatch or could do this or could do that according to the playbook of a Floyd Mayweather, and they understand that's the best that the sport's going to give them and they're going to be happy with it. So, but for the diehard fans or the people that do know better, you know, I think that having a stand against what happens and make it as if we're going to protest boxing, you know, I think you'll have the promoters and everything else. They won't even pay attention. So I don't know if that's the way to do it. If we could do it in an organized fashion, maybe they'll listen.
What you need is you need a coach is saying good matchmaking is the hardest job in boxing. But it's not. No, it's not. Coach is wrong. And the reason why I say that is because there's an asterisk next to that. It's not the matchmakers that can't make the good fights. It's the fighters who don't accept it. And listen, I do matchmaking, and I'll call up a fight. I'll try to get a fight. You know, you got a 6-0 guy, and you call up guys. Hey, you know, we're looking for a fighter. You know, you call up a 3-3 guy, or you call up a 5-1 guy, and you know they'll call. Yeah, we'll fight him. And then you call the 6-0 guy back. Hey, we got a 3-3 guy. Oh, no, we don't want him. He's too tough.
Right, exactly.
You know, we don't want that guy.
That's how it goes down.
You know, he's 3-3. You know, I mean,
I want somebody who's 0-6.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I want a guy that, you know, they need to, you know, have a respiratory to carry him out.
I want a
punching
bag.
Yeah, I don't want a guy. I don't know, 3-3.
I don't want somebody with a pole.
You know, I get 6-0 guy. I get him a 3-3 guy, and I get the manager calling me. Well, what are you trying to get my kid killed? I mean, come on, what are you talking about? Yeah, I mean, give me a break. You know, what we need in the sport for every division, and it's pretty simple. If fighters were forced to climb the ranks the way they used to and fight the guy up in front of them like a ladder, you know, you become a prospect. And then once you're a prospect, you work your way into being a contender. And I'm not saying top 10. I'm saying top 20. They have contenders in the top 20. Then when you hit that number 20 spot and now you're a contender, now you look for a guy maybe at the number 16 spot and fight him.
That's what you do. Know, that's
and then you
science.
Climb up.
That's how it was always.
And then not only are you climbing it, not only are you getting PR and everything, but you're getting better. You know, that's not what happens today.
Fight up when you're starting out.
You know?
You have a couple confidence builders, but you fight up to get yourself up there.
Yeah. You know. Anyway, he says Eubank Quinlan was much more entertaining, but only because the Price Hammer fight was so pathetic. Quinlan started off pretty good, and then for a short while, it was looking like he was in a good fight. But before long, it was business as usual for Eubank as he dominated the fight, mixing posing with flurries of punches. Quinlan showed courage and resilience and absorbed a lot of punishment throughout the fight, barely making it through the seventh. But by the 10th, with such a wide gap on the cards, it was clear that he had taken too much punishment to have any chance of pulling out a miracle stoppage. And so the ref rightly stopped the fight. He says, anybody who thinks Eubank has a chance against Triple G is seriously deluded. Triple G would have had Quinlan out of there in two or three rounds, probably sooner. I think that Eubank's next fight should be against Saunders, and he would probably win this time. But as far as stepping up onto the world stage and tangling with any of the classy fighters currently at the top of the division in super middleweight and middleweight divisions, I can't really see him having a very bad future. He says, of course, could be wrong. But anyway, he says, lastly, I mentioned how crappy the commentary was. I mean, crap. They had Andre Ward and Lennox Lewis on the team. Oh, my God. They were obviously there as candy for the show because their ability to make any decent commentary was on the fights was zero. although Ward was a bit better than Lewis. Lewis used to be pretty good when he was on HBO. He says Lewis was asked for his opinion on Eubanks' performance, and this is what he said. He boxed well, and he knew what he had to do, and he did what he had to do, and that was it. That's all he said. I couldn't believe my eyes. Utter crap. I couldn't believe my ears. He says, utter crap. He says, and don't think I'm a guy who buys into all this bull. I watch the fights because, hell, somebody has to. I like that. How else are we going to know how crappy some of these shows are? He says, one last thing. Apparently, thousands of people who paid to watch a show on TV were greeted with a blue screen for the entire duration of the undercard fights and only got to see the main event. Plus, thousands more were overcharged by up to 10 times the amount due to some glitch in the system. Customers have been advised to check their bank statements to see if they were victims. Refunds have been promised. He says, I'm out of here. Catch your show in the chat room. Hey, thanks for the email, Willie. We appreciate that. And I tell you what, you know, they have to pay for that? They had to pay for that? I mean, maybe we don't have it as bad as we think over here.
No, I don't know, but I'll tell you. Yeah, that's definitely putting a different spin on that.
Yeah, you know, but I don't know. I think it's a pretty simple solution, and this is why, you know, I know I get criticized, but this is why I feel Floyd Mayweather kind of ruined the sport from his own success, and that is, you know, everybody now wants to follow that blueprint. You know, they want to fight their way to an impressive-looking record. And, you know, you even have fans that look at a record. I mean, take Huey Fury and Joseph Parker, for example. 22-0 and 20-0. Huey Fury's 20-0. And, you know, they're fighting for Parker's world title. And there's a lot of people that feel that they're good heavyweights because they're undefeated. You know, and, you know, show me who they beat. You know, show me a guy they beat. And you know, to stay on the Floyd Mayweather topic, I mean, you know, the argument with him is, yeah, he's got some big names on his resume. There's no question. But right. When did he fight them? And you know, at what weight and what were the conditions? I mean, Floyd Mayweather, you know, at least for the last 12 years, has not given up anything. You know, he doesn't, he gets to pick everything, the venue, the weight, the gloves, the split, you know, all those things. And although you can make the argument that he's earned that right, which he certainly has, to pound his chest and say he's the best ever when he fights guys at the end of their career or fights a guy that he's forcing to move up two weight classes or you know, fights a guy that he shouldn't have got the nod and gets the nod. I mean, I don't know. You know, I think everybody wants to emulate success, and Floyd's bank account shows that he's a successful guy. And, you know, the end of the story is people want to get undefeated records, but they don't want to fight anybody. And I've always said that it doesn't help the fighters, Sal.
No. No, it doesn't help the fighters in the long run. No. No.
You know, now Coach saying, oh, who did Tyson fight in his first 25? You know, Tyson fought whoever was there. You know, you know what I'm sick of? I'm sick of people complaining about eras that fighters have no control over. Listen, I was never a big fan of Lennox Lewis, but Lennox Lewis fought all the heavyweights that were available to him. You know,
yes, he did.
Mike Tyson did the same. You can't blame Mike Tyson for the division not being chock full of talent when he came along. You know, all you can do is when you're a champion is fight all of the people that are in your weight class during your era. Nobody's got a time machine yet. You know, the knock on Floyd is he could have fought other fighters sooner and we would have gotten better fights, but he waited until, you know, the odds were in his favor. You know, you can't, you know, just because Muhammad Ali fought in a heavyweight rich era, that doesn't mean you need to criticize every other person that came after him. Right now, the heavyweight division isn't that great. You got guys like Deontay Wilder holding a belt, Joseph Parker holding a belt. You really think these guys are world champion caliber fighters? Maybe by today's standards, but not in the long run, Sal.
No. I don't understand exactly what you're saying. Good point.
I don't know. But I don't see it. I don't see a change in it. And I think that Luis Ortiz, getting back to that, was dead on with his complaints about Deontay Wilder. I think that Deontay Wilder is a guy that pounds his chest. He acts like he's, I mean, when you ever see him outside the ring, and I mean, he acts like he is like rose people throwing rose petals down before he walks into a room, you know. And it's so funny. Everyone's in on the joke but him, you know.
That's
It, Sal. I just don't understand. I don't understand how the fans act like he's so great. I you know, a handful of fans that have bought into his bullshit, and the people that drank the Kool-Aid. I mean, I just don't get it.
Must have been cultivated early on. I understand what you're saying, Bob. I understand. Well, I tell you.
You know, it's unfortunate. You know, and you know, you look at the Super Bowl that we just dealt with.
Yeah, like I said, it was a championship fight right there.
You know, I mean, here you
the
got
you
a team.
And I know.
Here you got the young up and coming team, so to speak, in the Falcons. Even though, you know, their quarterback has been on that team for a decade, and some of their stars are no spring chickens, but you know, here they come, and you know, they basically shoot their load in the first half, and the slow and steady tortoise of a team like the Patriots, with the proven veterans, the proven system, the discipline, all those things that we talk about in the sport of boxing, come back and win a late round stoppage over the Falcons. And you know, hey, listen, I'm a Jets fan. I don't like the Patriots. I was rooting for the Falcons, but I certainly can't take anything away from the Patriots and their fortitude, Sal, because, I mean, you know, what other teams would have hung in there being down 21 points by the halftime?
Well, that's the whole thing. It's what I said on Friday. They have the experience. They know how to win. And that's what winners do. They take the best and they get up off the canvas. They pick themselves up. They regroup themselves. They go back to their corner. They listen for the input of what's going on. They come out and they know how to handle someone's offense, and they know how to be defensive. And you know, it's how to turn on their own offense. And that's why I can analogize it to a great championship fight. And the cornermen, halftime on the Patriots side, I mean, they instructed their fighters, their 11 fighters, how to go out there and win. And their 11 fighters were still just dusting, slapping the dust off their knees, getting ready to get back into the game. They did it inch by inch, round by round. And they came back, and they delivered that knockout blow with the overtime touchdown. That's a hell of an analogy.
Yeah, well, I still think that, you know, Deontay Wilder, you know, I want him to do well.
I know.
I wish he did fight one of these big names and win. I mean, you know, I mean, the best win on his resume is Ettore Spitzka. And Ettore Spitzka was, you know, I mean, you know, he's a good fighter, you know, a tough guy, but that was the best win on Deontay Wilder. It really was. And I'm not putting Berman Stavern in that list either. But anyway, joining us now, Sal, is Dax Khan with his thoughts. What do you think about the Luis Ortiz? I think he was dead nuts on about his comments about Deontay Wilder, Dax.
Yes, he is. You know, he's been saying these same comments for well over a year now. You know, when you look a little further into both these guys, you know, Luis Ortiz really doesn't have much room to criticize much himself. So, you know, when you compare both these guys and you look at their opponent resume, you know, they have some similar opponents. You know, well, they both fought Malik Scott. You know, Luis Ortiz,
he's got,
you know,
Brian Jennings.
Lately, he's fought with David Allen. He's got a blown-up cruiserweight in Latif Coyote, where he tested positive for PEDs in that fight. You know, Brian Jennings is his best win.
It is. Brian Jennings is his best win, and Brian Jennings was a major win. He was a top five guy at the time.
Yeah, but that's it, you know, and that's what he has. You know, he has Brian Jennings. You know, as for Deontay Wilder, you know, who's he, you know, they share Malik Scott. You know, Ortiz went the distance with him, but then, you know,
he's got Areola. He's got Areola and Stavern. And I think Stavern, we realized was a fraud, and Chris Areola, although he's a tough guy, he's become a proverbial punching bag. So I don't know. But Luis Ortiz doesn't pound his chest and say he's the best on the planet either, like Deontay.
He talks a lot, though, and some of that frustration I do understand, because, you know, when he was with Golden Boy, they weren't getting him any of the fights that he wanted. And, you know, now that he's over there with Eddie Hearn, you know, we're expecting big things to happen all of a sudden. And really, you know, what's happened? I think he fought Tony Thompson, and then he fought David Allen, who had just went the distance with Dillian White, and, you know, that was kind of a war. So, you know, this era of heavyweights is much like, as you know, people were speaking in the chat room about Mike Tyson, you know, where we have the belts are scattered around, you know, with good fighters, but nobody is a great fighter. You know, you have the, you know, the Joseph Parker fight that's going to happen, as you mentioned earlier, down in New Zealand against Huey Fury. And, you know, what has Huey Fury done other than be active against nobody, you know, to get himself a title shot? You know, Joseph Parker, he had some better names on there, but, you know, the fight against Andy Ruiz Jr., you know, it's kind of questionable. I think anywhere else, Joseph Parker may not have won that. So this is a very, very hurt heavyweight era right now. You know, but we always speak about, you know, about how, you know, going behind the numbers on things, and, you know, these guys actually make the Klitschko and Joshua fight, you know, seem so relative, because, you know, one, you have a kid who everybody's really expecting, you know, to take over this division and bring it back to its glory days, and you have a former guy who's a first ballot Hall of Famer who's going to, you know, if he wins, then, you know what, it's really not going to be much of a knock on AJ, and if he loses, you know what, he's passing the torch, and people are going to remember, you know what, this kid actually, you know, solidified himself by beating an all-time great. You know, when you know, Vladimir Klitschko is a guy who, whether you like his style or not, and we spoke about this off the air, you know, many times, you know, the guy, his combined resume, you know, in championship fights, his opponents have an over 90% win streak. You know, he never ducked anybody. You know, so, you know, going against a guy like that, and, you know, with AJ, even despite Vladimir's loss to Tyson Fury, this really, you know, it's just frustrating. As you said before, it's frustrating. The David Price fight, I watched that this week, and the guy who sent the email, I think it was Willie, he was dead on there with, you know, David Price, what did he do? He stood there, and he just covered up. And that's all he did. He covered up, and he won every round, you know, because Hammer really didn't do anything, and he did look like a big pig in there. But, you know, with David Price, just covered up, he punched himself out, and then, you know, he got knocked out. I mean, this is a sad, sad, sad heavyweight division.
Well, I mean, first of all, I agree with you about Anthony Joshua and Klitschko. It's a clear classic matchup of youth versus experience, and it's going to be interesting to see the outcome. And I've always said, and I know I've said it on air, and I've said it to you many times, Dax, if Vladimir Klitschko fought, if his style was the way he fought Kubat Pulev, this guy would be, people would be looking at him as one of the greatest heavyweights of all time. Forget his stats, which he definitely still has. But, I mean, he was exciting in that fight. He had a very destructive attitude in that fight, and the end result was something we're just not used to seeing. But just to comment on what you were saying, you know, the way I look at fighters in any division is to become a great fighter or you know, looked upon as being a great fighter from the fans, you got to fight the top fighters. I mean, you can't. What's happening today is that they're selling a bag of goods that basically have an undefeated record attached to them, and the fans are buying into the fact that because they have the O, they must be good. And I just don't think that fighters today are willing, whether it's the fighters or their management, they're not willing to go in there and test themselves, challenge themselves, and risk not being great to be great, if that makes any sense. And
absolutely.
Yeah, and that's the problem.
Today, unlike people who criticize you all the time, they criticize me, and they criticize a lot of people who've been watching the sport for 20, 30, 40 years, or, you know, more, however you want to say it, that, you know, oh, you always compare the old-time guys against the new-time guys because you just can't understand the time change. But, you know, the reason why you, the words you just said is the reason why fans today are uneducated fans. If people want to take offense to that, I don't know what to tell them, but, you know, they're uneducated fans. They base their opinions on what they like and what they don't like. It has nothing to do with what takes place in the ring. They base it on, I don't like that guy. And that's all it is. If they like somebody, they can fight all the cupcakes and all the showcase fights they want. It doesn't matter how many they do it, and as long as they're winning, I like them, they're great. But if they don't like a guy and that guy's fighting nothing but the best out there, you know what? Everybody he faces is overrated. You know, there is no subjectivity where I don't like that guy, but he's good.
No, I couldn't agree more. And Triple G is a great example. But anyway.
Absolutely, yes.
And guys, what we see here is like what we see with the maneuvering of opponents being lesser than deserving or not as equivalent in the ring. You know, when you're afraid to lose, you're afraid to win. And I don't mean just getting the W, but being something special. If you're going to fight scared, or you're going to fight somebody, you're not going to win. And these guys want to beef up and want to do things, and it's not easy. It's not easy.
No.
And you know what? It's not.
Yeah, but it reminds me of a classic line, Sal, you know, once said by Kermit the Frog. It's not easy being green, you know.
You know, this is how when I speak about how uneducated the fans are. I had somebody tell me the other day when the Klitschko and Joshua fight was mentioned, do you know the reason why this guy chose Anthony Joshua? Because he's a gold medalist. He'll give Vladimir a boxing lesson. Vladimir has never been in the ring with a gold medalist. He doesn't know what it's like to be in there with somebody of Joshua's caliber. I just had to shake my head.
Really?
Well, obviously, that's a selling point because Klitschko, listen, I'm not a huge fan.
He's a gold medalist.
I'm not a huge fan of Klitschko only because of his style, because it's boring to me. But I can't ever say that Vladimir Klitschko, whether he wins, loses, or draws with Anthony Joshua, he's never avoided anyone. He's never been a class act in and out of the ring. I mean, he's the definition of what a champion should represent, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And at time, because for so long, you know, he adapted that style that Emmanuel Stewart helped him with. You know, of Vladimir Klitschko, you know, he did become boring for quite a few times. Effective, but yes, boring, you know, but, you know, the guy, you know, is himself is a former gold medalist. Early in Vladimir's career, people forget what a machine he was, you know, just destroying everybody. His defense was so lax that, you know, that's what caused him, you know, to get knocked out. He got knocked out early. I think Ross Thompson knocked him out, and then, of course, what happened down in South Africa with Corey Sanders. So, you know, but, you know, it's just the uneducated fans that just drive me nuts, you know. Oh, he's a gold medalist. Klitschko's never been. The guy is a gold medalist. The guy dominated the division for a decade, and you're sitting there saying that this kid, you know, is going to give him a boxing lesson. You don't give boxing lessons to guys like that. You know, Joe Smith Jr., who had a great win over Bernard Hopkins, but you know what? He didn't give him a boxing lesson. Danny Green from down in Australia knocked out Roy Jones in a round, but you know what? You don't give Roy Jones boxing lessons. So that's what I mean by the mentality of the fan today. You know, they just really don't. They spend no time to learn the history of a fighter, and they don't look at the situation or circumstances. They just see what's in front of them, and they base it on who they like at that moment. And who they like today doesn't mean that's who they like tomorrow.
Good point. Any thoughts?
Better news?
Yeah.
All right. Tomorrow, Kell Brook and Errol Spence, that is going to a purse bid tomorrow. Something has to be agreed upon. You know, Kell has to agree to some sort of terms on whatever that whoever wins that purse bid, or he's going to be forced to vacate that title.
I thought he was moving up in weight anyway.
He might be, but, you know, now that doesn't look good, though. You know, if you're going to move up in weight, just come out and say, you know what, I'm moving up in weight. You know, when I went to the Golovkin fight, I realized that, you know, 147 is not for me anymore. You know, I have been a 154-pound fighter in the past. You know, I did have success with Golovkin up until, you know, he caught me with that punch that fractured the eye socket. You know, I felt comfortable. I felt strong. So, you know what, let me vacate the title, and I'm going to seek bigger and better things, or, you know, just a bigger weight class, however you want to phrase it, at 154 instead of holding this title hostage, you know, which bothers me. You know, some, you're holding it up when there's, you know, a lot of guys out there working hard and they're ready to get some work done. So if he does vacate, who would be, you know, a suitable opponent worthwhile for Errol Spence to face in that division for that vacant title?
I don't know, but I would, whatever happened to Sean Porter, how come he's not in the mix anymore? You know, you got Garcia fighting Thurman. Sean Porter would be a guy that I would like to see Errol Spence. I mean, who else is there?
Yeah, right now it's on that top level. I'm in terms of guys ready for a title shot. You know, the pickings are slim. There's a lot of there are a lot of prospects who in another year or two will definitely be in the mix. But right now, guys who have put themselves in terms, put themselves in position for a title fight. You know, the pickings are slim right there. So next week's fights, Rashi Warren and Zanakinov, you know, for Warren's WBA title. Zana, you know, he just came over to Cleveland this weekend. I was talking to Andre Cormanci, who's out there with them, with Ricky Hatton. You know, his team seems very confident that he's going to beat Rashi Warren. Are you familiar with Zanat?
You know, he's a tough guy, and Rashi Warren, I think there's a lot of question marks with him. You know, I know he was an outstanding amateur, but he just hasn't made that transition to the pros. I think that on paper, everybody thinks this is an easy fight for Warren, but, his opponent is a tough guy. I don't know. I think it's going to be a good test. I like the fight.
Zanassi is a relentless body puncher, you know. He's not the fastest guy. You know, he has decent footwork, I don't want to compare him to Triple G, but, you know, he's one of those guys that slowly cuts off the ring. You know, he's not really fleet-footed, so you have to continuously move. He's not a guy that allows you, you know, to take a break in the ring. Now, Rashi Warren has some of the fastest hands that, you know, we've ever seen in the past two decades. You know, question is, can Rashi Warren be able to continuously move throughout the whole fight? You know, he only has, I think, maybe a 10% knockout ratio. He actually has a lower knockout ratio than Paulie Malignaggi did, and I don't really think he's going to be able to hurt Zanat. So, you know, I'm just curious to, you know, hear what happens when, if Rashi Warren runs out of gas and these body punches catch up to him.
Well, Zanat has to catch him. You know, you mentioned his hand speed. He's got blazing hand speed, but he's also got some decent footwork. So, you might see a guy that's bouncing around ring post to ring post, trying to pick his shots in a not so exciting fight, but gets the points. You know,
that footwork. And now the winner of this here, you know, the winner of this is going to be, you know, the WBA champion. I think this is part of the WBA's plan where they're trying to eliminate the other champions, because as a not right now, I think he has the interim title. So, you know, we're going to, you know, that's going to at least cut down on one of their titles anyway. But, you know, it's going to be a very interesting fight. Now, the main event there, you know, Robert Easter Jr. Against Luis Cruz, I really don't see that being as much of a fight. Luis Cruz is, you know, maybe B-level at best. Now, with Mikey Garcia in that division, Robert Easter Jr., you know, him facing Mikey Garcia, if he should win this fight, you know, that's something that should happen in 2017. Or do you think that's something that his team is going to try to avoid and maybe make the fight with Jorge Linares after Jorge Linares wins his next fight, which I believe that, you know, he's going to win the rematch over there as well?
I thought that the talk was Linares against Mikey Garcia. It's a bigger name. I mean, Robert Easter's still young. A lot of people don't feel he deserved the title shot and ultimately a title at this point in his career. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think it all depends on the performance that he has. But I agree with you. I mean, he's not in there too tough, similar to his whole career, except for his last fight was a good one.
Yeah, this is true. You know, it's again, you know, that just keeps relating back to the conversation that goes on continuously on, you know, these titles going to people that, you know, not that they're not in their future would they have won a title, but you know, it's just happening, you know, way too soon. Sammy Vasquez, didn't get to talk about that. You know, we speak about David Price earlier, you know, a guy who had a solid amateur career, but obviously he is not, you know, he is not pro material. You know, Sammy Vasquez, you know, his knockout last week by the hands of Luis Collazo, you know, I'm starting to wonder to myself, you know, maybe Sammy Vasquez, he kind of peaked himself out, you know, in that loss before, you know, we're actually seeing what he's made of. Is this a guy that, you know, going to be an exciting local attraction, but, you know, we're not going to see him any further above the level he's already reached.
Well, this is what Sal and I are talking about all the time. When you're not increasing your level of opposition as you're maturing as a fighter and climbing the ranks, so to speak, you're not going to get better. And I think that that's a great example with Sammy Vasquez. You know, Luis Collazo, on the other hand, you got to give credit to. And the problem with Luis Collazo's entire career is which Luis Collazo shows up to the fight. You know, Luis Collazo is either on or off. There's no in-between with him. And when he's on, he's a tough out. He's caused a lot of fighters fits, and he's won some fights when he was supposed to lose, and he's lost some fights that he was supposed to win. You know, I think the biggest enemy for Luis Collazo was Luis Collazo, to be honest with you. Now he's at the twilight of his career. I think his opportunities have opened again, and I think you're going to see him get a chance for another major fight. What he does with that chance, we'll have to see.
Sometimes a guy, you know, when they kind of realize that the career's coming to an end and they're only going to have that one more shot, you know, they become rejuvenated for a short period of time. You know, an example for that would be maybe Shane Mosley when he fought Antonio Margarito. All of a sudden, you know, for one night, you know, he had a glimpse of a prime young James Shane Mosley. So who knows? Maybe Luis Collazo, you know, maybe that's the route he's going. Last two things for today. You know, one thing, a bit sad news and then a bit of inspiring news. Mia St. John, who we all know, you know, she's one of the, I guess, maybe you want to call the pioneers to help, you know, women boxing get on the big stage, if you wanted to call it that, you know, back in when, you know, Christy Martin and everybody was coming up. You know, her son, Julian, you know, died in the mental health care center, and she's like a big advocate for that on trying to improve standards with mental health condition in this country. But I didn't know. I just found out recently that she actually suffers from a vascular necrosis herself. You know, right now, Mia St. John, is actually, she has to get around with the assistance of a cane.
I didn't know that. What's the shame?
Yeah, wow. The condition where, you know, the bone tissue dies through a lack of blood supply. But, you know, this lady's out there continuously, and she always has a smile on her face and always upbeat, and she's always working out, for, you know, for good causes. So, you know, that's one of those things where, you know, even after something, you know, a career's over, and she's not so much in the spotlight anymore, you know, she's, instead of looking for ways to put herself into the spotlight, you know, she's taking, you know, her popularity and her energies and trying to, you know, to focus into something more positive, you know, just for her community, rather than, you know, trying to stay on too long and just trying, you know, be a camera hog like we see a lot of people, male or women, in all those sports.
Yeah, good point, good point.
And last thing, Philly trainer and Pennsylvania Hall of Famer just this weekend, George James, you know, he passed away from cancer.
Well, that's sad to hear. So many well-known boxing people are moving on over this last year or two. It's amazing how many are all hitting the end.
And for people out there who don't know who George James is, you know, he's a guy who worked with Gypsy Joe Harris. He worked with Georgie Benton, Willie Monroe, not Willie Monroe Jr., but Willie the Worm Monroe, Eddie Flash, Sonny Liston, and he also worked with young Joe Walcott in his fights for Sugar Ray Robinson. So, you know, just, you know, it's already February, and we're already starting to lose some of our greats. So, you know, hopefully 2017 is going to be nothing like 2016. My gosh, we lost so many last year.
Yeah, not only in the boxing business, but just across the board, so many well-known people, 2016 bit the dust, yeah. Which is...
Do you watch the SAG Awards?
Not really, no. No.
I watched them last week. I really don't watch them too often. There was really nothing on. I just happened to watch them. And the list of names of celebrities, you know, actors that we lost last year... a lot of them I didn't even realize had passed away, but there must have been a good 30 or 40 of them. I was like, oh my gosh.
I know, when at the end of the year, at when they were revisiting 2016, I was shocked at some of the people that passed on. Great point. But
and then Mary Tyler Moore just passed away.
I know, yes, I know, she did.
And Betty White is still going strong. God
yeah,
bless her.
I know. God bless her is right. And I tell you.
All right, everybody, enjoy your week.
All right, Dax, have a good one.
Dax, take care, buddy.
Betty White actually was very attractive in her early days, and so was the woman. So was the woman in what the heck? Do you remember she wrote Murder? She wrote.
Yeah.
Whatever that actress. If you ever saw her early in her career, she was pretty attractive. But
yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Hey, how about what happened on this day in boxing history? Today's February 6th, Sal, and on this day in 1998, Reggie Johnson, knocks out William Guthrie in the fifth round to win the IBF World Light Heavyweight title, took place in Connecticut. On this day in 2004, Glenn Johnson wins a 12-round decision over Clinton Woods to win the vacant IBF World Light Heavyweight title, took place in England. On this day in 1987, Mark Breland knocks out Harold Volbrecht in the seventh round to win the vacant WBA World Welterweight title, took place in Atlantic City, New Jersey. On this day in 1988, Greg Haugen wins a 15-round decision over Vinny Pazienza to regain
the
IBF
that event.
World Lightweight title in Atlantic City on this day.
Yes, the convention center. We had a sold-out crowd there.
On this day in 1928, Frankie Gennaro wins a 10-round decision over Frenchie Bellinger to win the NBA World Flyweight title, took place in Toronto. And on this day, February 6th in 1967, Muhammad Ali wins a 15-round decision over Ernie Terrell to unify the World Heavyweight title, and that took place at the Houston Astrodome in Texas on this day in 1967. Hey, man, you have any final thoughts, Sal?
No, I'm just looking forward to seeing the fights this month, and we'll see what happens in the political arena with boxing. And like I said, I think we were given a great view of a tremendous Super Bowl game last night. And, we'll be talking about that, too, my friends and I today. I know that.
I'll be looking forward to baseball season now. But
yes, spring training. The Yankees are down there in Florida today.
Yeah, I like the other New York.
I like
the anyway. We hope that you guys enjoyed today's show. Don't forget, we'll be back Wednesday, and our Blast from the Past was scheduled to do with Salvador Sanchez. We're also scheduled to have my man, Boxing Hall of Famer Larry Hazard, join us, and we might get a surprise guest from Fight TV to celebrate their 1-year anniversary being on air. So make sure you tune in next time, which is Wednesday. So I'll leave everybody with this. Make sure you tune in Wednesday morning. Same bat time, same bat channel. Until then, ciao, baby. Da na 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 na